Yes, sir. Welcome to Real Sports Guys, or Real Guys Talk Real Sports, Renegade Radio. As we always do about this time, you are now in tune to the resistance, and we're going to hold you down for the next 2 hours. I got my man, CLT Sports PhD, in the mix. Yell at him for a moment, homie.
Great show plan. Great show. Got some guests coming in. Got a fantasy guru to get all the fantasy needs taken care of. And I'm just flying high. Great weekend of college football, pro football, Monday night. You know, I'm just where I need to be in the second weekend of September.
Yeah, you know, he's chilling in the cut like Neosporin. You know what I'm saying? He laid back. We're going to get it popping. Like you said, we got a great show for you guys tonight. If at any time you want to get on, feel free to call in around 9:30 tonight. We're going to have a fantasy expert come in and give us some, give you all some advice. I don't need no advice. No, I'm just playing. He's going to give us all some advice on how we can better perform this year as we get deeper into the fantasy football season. You know, first weekend, we're going to get into some of the bumps and bruises that everybody took. You know, that's the beautiful thing about it is, you know, you think you got a game locked up come Monday night, and, you know, a 5'9" white wide receiver won 99 yards, and you wind up losing for the week. You know, things like that happen.
Go on and tell the listeners the story. You got to tell them. You got to tell them.
Oh, absolutely. So as of, you know, about 6 o'clock, it's about 8 o'clock yesterday, I'm comfortably in the lead in one of my fantasy leagues. I'm up by, you know, 20 points. This particular person I'm going against, you know, has Wes Welker still playing, and they also have Sebastian Janikowski still on tap to go that night. So I feel like, you know, Wes has had a decent game. He already caught his touchdown. He did his damage. He had about 86 yards at the time. I'm like, okay, look, all you got to do is hold him in check, you know, keep him about 120, don't let him get in the end zone again, and it's, I got this. Sebastian ain't going to go nuts like that. So I felt pretty good about my chances. And I'm watching, in another league, I have Reggie Bush as one of my running backs. So Miami has the ball, okay? Most of you, those of you that watch the game, you know exactly what I'm finna get into. Miami has the ball. They have to go. They have the half-yard line, all right? These morons come out with 4 wide receivers and throw a fade route. Probably the least high percentage play you could possibly run. Okay, one of the. All right. So I'm like, okay, they should have just gave it to Reggie and at least let him try and dive over the pile. All right, that could have got me some points, and that would have helped me win another league, win another matchup. Instead, these sucker MCs throw a fade route to Brian Hartline, whoever that is, and forget that Chad Henne is their quarterback. So they throw this weak-ass fade route. It's incomplete, of course, because Chad Henne is the quarterback. And so, you know, I lose out on those points. At that point, I'm like, whatever, that's all good, not a problem. So the Patriots get the ball, turnover on downs. The Patriots come out 5 wide, empty backfield. I'm like, okay, Belichick is on one tonight. He's just going to chuck the ball around all night. So Brady draws back. You know, they didn't run. I can't even remember what kind of a route it was. But he hits Welker along the sidelines. And Benny, the Sapp kid, Benny Sapp, whatever his name, the Sapp boy, couldn't tackle him. They cut Benny Sapp today. I wish they had to cut him Sunday. Okay? They cut him today. Day late, dollar short, in my opinion. They cut him today. You know, Wes Welker's quick. Wes Welker ain't fast. Wes Welker ran 99 and a half yard down the field. So not only did Miami not help me in one league, they then hurt me in the league when I was up by 20 points, because in that one play, my opponent took the lead. Then later on that night, Sebastian Janikowski had the nerve to kick a 63-yard field goal. So, in short, it wasn't my night in that league. And that's how fantasy football goes.
That's right.
It was just not my night. And I'm sure whoever I was playing against was at the crib eating Cheetos, drinking a beer, and smiling his ass off at the way things turned out. But again, as I said, that's the way it goes in fantasy football. Ain't really much you can do about it. That's just how it is. But, you know, that's the way it goes. But all in all, it was a great weekend. You know, we're going to get into our pick six. We're going to check in and see how the RSG experts did picking games last week. Phil T and Devon, they held it down. Game changer, not so much. But we'll get into that. Remember, if you want to get on, feel free to call in 1-347-989-0844. At any time tonight, if you want to just hang out and then call in, 9:30 is the time. Because that's when we're going to have our fantasy expert on. You can ask him some questions, get some information, pick his brain a little bit. It's always good to kind of touch base with somebody who's been there and who's done it. So we like to provide that for our listeners, so feel free to call in at that time, all right? But right now, we're going to get into the funky editorial, like we
that
always do about
the one thing
time.
We need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan,
Sid.
Everybody wanna get funky one more time.
All right. So for the funky editorial this week, one thing I want to get into. I want to just get into week one impressions. Just what did you see? You know, my daughter. I have a 14-year-old daughter. She had something going on. It was a friend's birthday. And they were going to do something at the mall. So I take her to the mall. And, you know, I'm like, okay, it's interrupting my flow. I'm trying to watch the games. All right, I'm going to go drop her off and get back to the crib, finish watching the games. So her friend turns out to be about an hour late. Her friend texts her when we get around the time we get there, oh, I'm going to be about, you know, 3:30. Okay, so it's about 2:30 now. So we're like, oh, okay, so now we got an hour. Lucky for us, the mall is right next door to a BW3s. So what do? Stroll on over, get some chicken wings, get a beverage for myself. She had lemonade. And we watched some games, man. And I was in heaven, man. It couldn't have got any better. I mean, I felt like how I would imagine a child with ADHD feels, okay? Where it's like, I don't know what to look at. I don't know how long to look at it for. And I like it. So, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one who was feeling this way. So, you know, I'm gonna let Phil T touch base. I hope we get some listeners to call in. I just want people to call in and give us your impressions of the first weekend, something that caught your eye. You know, the quarterbacks was on fire. You know, we're going to talk about Cam. We're going to talk about Brady. Talk about some trends that we may see with changing of the guard in some of the divisions in the league. You know, there's already whispers about teams tanking to get Andrew Luck. And I don't know if y'all caught it, but my man Jaws cussed on TV. Just cold cussed. And then apologized for it on air that same night.
Right. I mean,
I didn't even, you know, I caught the cuss, but I did catch the cuss. It was like Janet at the Super Bowl, where it was like, did I just see what I saw? It was the same type of effect where it was like, did he just say shit? You know what I'm saying? I was like, did he just say that? Because it was real conversational, real smooth, real just like, bam, he threw it in there. So it was one of those things that kind of caught you off guard. But then he apologized for it later. I was like, okay, yeah, you did cuss. That's what I thought I heard. So, you know, it was a lot going on, and I'm sure he was excited. Everybody was excited. Opening weekend, you know, it was great. So I'm going to throw it to my man, D. Newell, Phil T. Sports, PhD. Give us your first impressions of your impressions of week one. Now that it's had a little bit of time to marinate on you.
Yeah, a couple of things. So the team that showed me something unexpectedly, I mean, a lot of teams to pick from. But I'm gonna stick with two, and the first one was the Buffalo Bills. You know, I'm in Southern Missouri right now, and you know, seeing a couple of years ago, it was really tough. you know, living in Missouri, really tough because, you know, the 1 o'clock game was typically the Rams. The 4 o'clock game was typically the Chiefs, and they both were horrible. But now, you know, last year they both, you know, one of them made the playoffs. The Rams are right on the door, high expectations, and the Bills just smashed the Chiefs. And unfortunately, Eric Berry, you know, the guy was a rookie last year, made the Pro Bowl, defensive back for the Chiefs. He's done for the year. I believe he tore his ACL. So even with that said, I was very impressed with the Bills. You know, people might say, well, they were playing against the Chiefs. I tell you what, you beat anybody in the NFL 41-7, you're doing something right. And to me, they came out like a team that was just ready. You know, like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I really like to pick up a Brad Smith. I think it adds a better dimension to the Wildcat. The second team that really showed me something unexpectedly, believe it or not, was the Dolphins. You know, last couple of years, the Dolphins have been a smash-mouth team. You know, they did a lot of Wildcat. They had a slew of running backs there, Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown, and they just ran the ball. And they kind of handcuffed Henny to a certain degree. I was really happy to see that they've kind of opened things up because I think it reflects their personnel more, especially like they've gotten rid of those two running backs and now they have Reggie Bush. They got a, you know, in my mind, one of the top 10, if not top 5 receivers in the league and Brandon Marshall, and they just weren't utilizing him enough. And so, you know, hitting through for 400 yards against the Patriots, I don't think that should be understated. Yes, they lost. Yes, Henny made some boneheaded plays, but in general, I think he looked like a much improved quarterback. Quite honestly, I haven't seen him play that well ever, you know, and I'm a big Michigan fan. I watched him all 4 years in Michigan, and he didn't play that well against college competition. The last thing is, again, I'm glad they're highlighting Reggie Bush, man, because, you know, we all been kind of waiting for Reggie to break through, and I think last night we kind of saw ideally what Reggie is. You know, somebody can carry the ball 10 to 15 times, you know, maybe get you 50, 60 yards, but, you know, it's a guy that can also catch 5 to 10 balls every game and keep that defense honest. So those are the two things I took away that two teams, the Bills and the Dolphins, that showed me something unexpectedly in week one.
Yeah. On that same note of teams that kind of showed up unexpectedly, one team is Washington. The Redskins defeated the Giants 28-14. I've been high on Tim Hightower all preseason. I like the way he runs. I felt like he was a good fit for that system that Shanahan likes to run with his own blocking. But what really kind of shocked me was there was some good wrecks. You know, we got going back to the Bears in 06 when we had good wrecks and bad wrecks, they got good wrecks. And the thing about the Redskins is that they have a solid defense. They have a very solid defense. They got playmakers on defense. Their defense is going to allow them to be in a lot of games. It's a similar kind of formula to the formula. It's a similar team, the way they're built, to the one that Rex took to the Super Bowl in Chicago. I don't think they're as explosive on special teams as that team was, but as far as having a solid defense, having a sound running game, they're right there. So I think that's a team that's going to make a little bit more noise than I think a lot of people anticipated. You know, when I looked at Washington going into the season, you know, I figured they maxed out at about 6 wins. The way they played this weekend, if Rex can, you know, Rex is not going to throw for 300 yards every week. But if he can throw, you know, for between 200 and 250, and they can get a solid contribution out of Hightower and the rest of the backs in a run game, that's going to be a tough team to beat because they're going to make it difficult for teams to score on defense. So the Redskins are a team that I really felt like showed a lot because I'm pretty high on the Giants. I like what the Giants have. They've been hit by a lot of injuries, but I expected more out of them. And in particular, I expected more out of Eli. He played well, but I don't think he played well as he kind of talked himself up. You know, he made a comment about being as good or better than Brady or on Brady's level. He should shut up until he has a really good game. That's just a little bit of advice from the game changer for Eli. Another thing that I felt like really came out the gate is, well, I won't say they showed something, but it wasn't good. And that's Minnesota. Minnesota lost to San Diego. Minnesota was one of those teams where it was like, let's wait and see who they are, what they. Because I mean, they still have similar personnel to the personnel that they had when we were talking about them as possible Super Bowl contenders. You felt like they solidified the quarterback position with bringing in Donovan, but I'm honestly baffled. I've always been on the Donovan bandwagon, but I got 1 foot off. That's a Ryan Leaf-esque performance, dog. Like, seriously, I can't ride with that. I mean, like I said, I've always been on the Donovan McNabb bandwagon. I've always been a supporter. But 7 for 15 for 39 yards, I don't understand it. You have the best running back in the league. You should have some place to throw the ball. There should be opportunities to throw the ball because you're going against 8, sometimes 9-man fronts. So Minnesota showed me that they got a lot of work to do. I thought that, you know, again, they would be one of those teams that could be really good and could surprise us. And then maybe they still will. Again, it's just week one. But it looked awful against San Diego, and San Diego is kind of mediocre on defense. They're okay on defense, but San Diego didn't look great either. So Minnesota worries me a little bit. They showed me something, but they showed me something in a different direction. So, you know. Go ahead.
I tell you what, you know, and I'm a big McNabb fan, but quite honestly, I mean, I had better stats than JV football in 10th grade. I mean, 7 for 15 for 39 yards. I tell you what, you know who's looking real smart right now? And he was looking very smart last year was Andy Reid.
Yeah.
He knew something about McNabb that the fans did not know, and evidently a lot of NFL personnel did not know. Because, I mean, again, I truly hope that McNabb has a quality year.
Absolutely.
I was rooting for him. You know, I was rooting for him in Washington, and, you know, nearly after every game, with the exception of the first one, I'm thinking Andy Reid, I mean, he knew something we didn't.
Yeah, I honestly have to agree with you. Andy Reid saw, because, you know, this was a guy who was considered easily a top 7, maybe even top 5 quarterback.
Absolutely.
2 years ago.
Absolutely.
Not like 5 years ago, 2 years ago. You know, this is a guy who had taken a team to the NFC Championship 4 times, got into a Super Bowl, almost won a Super Bowl. He's falling off quick as hell. I really don't know no other way to put it.
I mean, his decline is almost like an NFL running back decline, you know?
Yeah.
Sean Alexander, Priest Holmes, they had 2 years. And then a year or two later, they just trying to hold on like my man Larry Johnson right now.
Yeah, see, you ain't even lying. I mean, this is the quickest I've seen a quarterback just deteriorate. And honestly, as of right now, there's really no physical reason. The brother's just inaccurate. He's not making the right reads. I don't know what's going on, but this ain't the same guy. And maybe Reed's system provided some safeguards and some smoke and mirrors to help, you know, to help mask some of his deficiencies. And these other coaches don't know how to do that right now. But this just doesn't look like the same guy. I don't. And I at this point, I really don't know what to think about him.
You know,
did he fool us for 8-9 years?
not according to Denny Green. Denny Green says they are who we thought they were, okay? but I tell you what, it makes me think a little bit of Tiger Woods. You know, I'm wondering, okay, did Mrs. McNabb bring a 9-iron to the back window? I mean, what's going on with McNabb? You know, there's no longer any Chunky Soup commercials. I mean, what's going on? Is there more off-the-field issues. I don't know, because like you said, I mean, this was a guy that we looked at almost like a modern-day Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Kelly took, what, the Bills to the Super Bowl 3 or 4 straight years.
Yep.
You know, and McNabb was kind of the same way. I mean, he didn't get all the way to the Super Bowl, but in this day and age, hey, the conference championship was close enough. And this is a guy, like you said, I mean, this guy was an elite quarterback. Even in the fantasy world, he was an elite top 5, top 7 quarterback. And
yeah,
it's just been a struggle the last couple of years. Quite honestly, it's been painful to watch.
It really has. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of like you got that old dog that's hobbling around. It's not in good health. And you can say, we just need to put it down. We just need to put him down. And maybe Minnesota is a new place for quarterbacks to go to die. I don't know. We'll see. You know, first Favre, now McNabb, we'll see. But, yeah, you know, we're going to keep an eye on Donovan because, again, I got 1 foot off. I don't want to lead the bandwagon. I'm going to give him a couple of weeks. But another 7-for-15, 39-yard performance from a quarterback, uh-uh. If my quarterback did that on Madden, I'd trade him today. So, you know, but what we going to get into right now are knee-jerk reactions from week one. So things that, you know, that happen that, you know, we've heard people overreact to. You know, we've heard people, you know, like, I'll throw one out there real quick. Knee-jerk reaction with Tony Romo. All of a sudden now, Tony Romo is this horrible, horrible quarterback. He can't win big games. And, you know, Dallas needs to get rid of him. I've heard Dallas fans say this, all right? Dallas needs to get rid of Tony Romo. He's never going to win a big one. He may not. But if you're basing that off of what happened on Sunday, what have you been watching for the last, since Romo has been your quarterback? You know what I'm saying? Like, Romo has never been that guy. He's always been kind of a, you know, a flake in tight situations. In the regular season, he puts up numbers. You know, I'm trying to think of an equivalent, a player to compare him to at that position. But he's always put up, you know, he's kind of like a football version of Vince Carter.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Cat puts up numbers, but they're hollow numbers. You know, a lot of flash. He makes a lot of great throws, makes a lot of great plays, can move around, has nice runs, a little fiery attitude, kind of Favre-ish in that way. But at the end of the day, you're going to be at home in January. And that's what Romo's always been. So now with all this talk of getting rid of him, y'all ain't got nothing in the cupboard behind him. So chill. Chill. Y'all going to be looking like the Colts.
Let me ask you this. What do you say to the people, to Romo supporters that say, you know what, he threw for more yards against the Jets than anybody did last year?
You know what, good for him. Good for him is what I would say. Good for him. Pat him on the back, but he's a veteran quarterback. If Cam Newton throws for 342 yards against the Jets and his team loses, I would applaud Cam because that's hard to do for a first-year quarterback, given all the circumstances. But Tony Romo, win the game. All right? What Herb say? You play to win the game. Don't have me go Herm Edwards out here, man.
Yeah.
Win the game. All right? Yeah, you threw for 342 yards. Great. But in the end, you got caught because you threw a pass to Revis. If you got them 342 yards, you probably got a lot of them by not throwing in a Revis. Dumb decision. Don't throw at Revis. All right? It's simple. They call it Revis Island for a reason. So, I mean, I can dig that yes, he had a great game up until the last quarter. And that's what I would say. Yeah, he played excellent up until the last quarter. And he made some huge mistakes. But he's always kind of done that. You know, that's kind of been his go-to move. You know, great game, great numbers. But in the end, do you get to win? No. That's Romo. That's who he is. That's what he's been. And that's kind of what the Cowboys have become. So that's one knee-jerk reaction. Don't get rid of Romo. The other one is Denver fans, geek down. Geek down. You do not want to see Tim Tebow quarterbacking your team in 2011. Just calm down. Rub your earlobes, woo side out, whatever you need to do, But, man, that thin air up there must have been affecting y'all heads because, yeah, Orton didn't look great. He didn't look great, but I guarantee Tebow would not have looked any better. So I just want to throw that out there. Denver fans, take it down a notch or two. Third string Jesus can't help you.
I got a couple of knee-jerk reactions.
Go for it, man.
So my first one kind of rolls into, okay? The Ravens can't be that good, and the Steelers can't be that bad. You know, I've been talking to my friends, listening on the radio, and people are about ready to anoint the Ravens as, 14-2, 15-1 team. And the same thing with the Steelers, but in the opposite direction. Quite honestly, I think the stars just aligned to see the outcome of that game to arrive at where it did. I mean, 7 turnovers. How frequently do we see 7 turnovers? And that, you know, never mind 7 turnovers from such a veteran squad such as the Steelers. So that's my first knee-jerk reaction. Don't get too carried away in what you saw in that Raven and Steeler game.
I wish Devon was here because I wanted to just give Flacco a shout out real quick.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it last week. Flacco.
Yeah.
You know,
he looked like a different quarterback. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. My knee's all right. I ain't jerking him, but I'm just saying. You know, he looked like a different quarterback. Just like to point that out.
Right,
you know, I'm not going to be taking too many victories in this particular show, especially when we get to pick 6. So I'm going to take mine where I can. Go ahead. Let's finish up, bro.
The next thing was the Bears. I did not see that coming. And, I mean, the Bears put a beat down on the Falcons. I know we got a couple of Atlanta folks listening. They've been texting me. But I'm sorry, your Dirty Birds just look dirty. I mean, they got their butts whooped. But again, I'm not on the Bears bandwagon quite yet, and I'm not completely off of the Falcons bandwagon. I still think the Falcons are a playoff team. Where honestly, I don't see the Bears making the playoffs, especially with Detroit emerging and with Green Bay in that same division. I actually see Detroit as a wild card team, if not winning their division. So those are my two knee-jerk reactions. You know, chill out, Bear fans. You know, you're not headed to don't get another Super Bowl shuffle schedule. And, again, Ravens can't be that good, but the Steelers can't be that bad.
Yeah, I dig those. But with the Bears situation, the Bears have a real interesting situation to me, man. I agree with you. Let's just take a moment and let's see what they do next week. Because the Bears got a lot of Jekyll and Hyde in them. You know, they're real sometimes. One week, they look like gangbusters. The next week, they look like just straight busters. And the reason is Cutler, right? Now,
why you gotta put it on Cutler, man?
Because at least last year, Cutler was very inconsistent. That's why I'm putting it on Cutler. Because Cutler was very inconsistent last year. When Cutler's on, they're good. When Cutler's not on, they're not good. And they don't really have a system around to compensate for his mistakes because when he's not good, he's turning the ball over, you know. And that's what bad Cutler looks like. Bad Cutler is not like, you know, Dilfer. Trent Dilfer wasn't going to throw for a bunch of touchdowns. He wasn't going to throw the rock all over the field, but he wasn't going to give it to the other team. You know, if you're going to be bad, beat Dilfer bad, you know. Where that's your floor. Your floor is Trent Dilfer. Your ceiling is Marino. You know, he has a Marino-esque ceiling. He has the talent and the tools to put up numbers like that. I think people forget that, you know, a couple years ago when he was in Denver and he was putting up all those crazy numbers, people were touting him as the next big thing. He had a rough year last year. He came into a very complex system and, you know, it took him some time to pick it up. What I do think we're going to see Cutler play better this year. I think we're going to see a better Jay Cutler than we saw. We're going to see a Cutler that's closer to the Cutler we saw in Denver than what we saw last year. I think last year was really difficult for him. It's not like he got Green Bay's receiving core out there the Bears receivers are mediocre at best. So it's a very complex and complicated system to pick up. He looked a lot more comfortable in what they were trying to do in that game. But I still will pump my brakes and give him an opportunity to see if he can sustain the level of play that he had. They're going to be a lot better than I anticipated they're going to be, but I'm with you. I think the Packers, I think there are two teams that could come out of this division as either division champs or a wild card. That's the Packers and the Lions. I really don't see another playoff team in that division. I think the Bears will hang in there, but I don't think they'll be able to overtake either one of those teams. And I did like what the Lions showed. I was impressed. I'm actually a little bit fearful for the rest of the league because Stafford and Megatron are going to be a problem.
Yeah,
that's going to be a problem. Like that's going to be something to deal with. I mean, yeah, because Megatron put up numbers with bum quarterbacks. I mean, bum quarterbacks. Now he's got a guy who can give him the ball. You know, let's just hope Stafford's shoulders stay intact. You know, as long as he stay upright, it's going to be all good in the D.
I was watching the game last year with my wife, and one of the announcers called him Megatron. And my wife was, you know, she was like, "What? How do you get a nickname of Megatron?" I said, "Just watch. Just watch." Just watch. And sure enough, I mean, he made a couple of huge plays.
Yeah.
A couple of huge plays. You know, it was interesting when, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch the Detroit game, but Stafford evidently threw a touchdown, and then he started limping. And, you know, I'm originally from Michigan. I must have received 15 text messages within 30 seconds, literally. I'm not exaggerating. Stafford's hurt. Stafford's hurt. You know, and one idiot in one of my leagues dropped him. He dropped him. He just dropped him right away.
Talk about a knee jerk.
Exactly, that is a knee jerk. And then Stafford comes back and finishes up the game, and I'm like, man, you must be an idiot. Goodness.
So we got two more topics to hit in the funky editorial, and then we're going to wrap this segment up and move into the pick six before our guest comes on at 9:30. We got to talk about Cam. I mean,
yeah.
What do we make of this performance, man? Because I was watching. I was at BW3s, and I was watching. And I actually took Cam in the draft with a late-round pick because I waited. This year my strategy was to wait on quarterbacks, so I waited really late. And kind of got a quarterback later. And so by the time I was looking to pick a second quarterback, a lot of my options had the same bye week as the quarterback I was starting, and that just don't make no sense. So I took a flyer on Cam in a couple of leagues, and I'm feeling really good because he's making me look real smart because I drafted him. You know, I drafted him, you know, said I'd take a flyer on him, see what he'd do, and the worst-case scenario is I have to drop him. Whoop-de-doo, he's a 14th, 15th round pick. So, but hell of a display. Hell of a display. I want to get your perceptions of it.
I got a couple of different points to make. And it'll be interesting to get Eric's take on Cam Newton, too, because he's got a very unique perspective on it. But, you know, first of all, the young man had a heck of a day. And honestly, I think no one was more happier than Steve Smith. Going into the season, Steve Smith, you know, I mean, he might be on antidepressants at this point because every pundit in the business was saying, yeah, Steve Smith would be lucky to get 500 yards this year. And what does he do? I know one of my leagues, Steve Smith put up almost 50, 60 points, okay? I think Cam looked good. I mean, he looked polished. He looked much differently than what I had saw of him in his second preseason game. He looked really composed, and the Cardinals were stacking the box, but they were also throwing some wrinkles at him, and there were a couple of plays. He made some excellent check downs. specifically, I think it was 3rd and 1 in the third quarter, where it looks like they had a pass set up and he checked down and ran away from the blitz, and the D'Angelo Williams got a first down. I mean, he looked like a composed quarterback, especially in the 2-minute drill in the fourth quarter. I was really impressed with him. And for those that don't know, Cam Newton eclipsed the record for a rookie quarterback in his first game in terms of yardage. He threw for over 400 yards.
422,
and he eclipsed a record that was originally held by Peyton Manning most recently and then broken by Matthew Stafford, but that was just at any point during the rookie year. Cam did it in his very first game. And it was just so interesting listening to the sportscasters because, you know, they kept saying, and Cam Newton broke Peyton Manning's record. I mean, you could just tell it was almost like they were looking at the teleprompter like, what? Is this right?
Right. Hey, who back there playing with the teleprompter again?
Yeah, you know. And so, honestly, I'm happy for the young man, and I hope that he continues to progress because guess what? Every NFL opponent, they will continue to progress in terms of how to limit the options that he has and show him different looks. You know, a lot of people felt that quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks, would be hurt the most with the abbreviated offseason, offseason workouts, and then with a shorter training camp. But honestly, if you think about it, Cam, he had one of the best quarterback coaches, you know, in the business. I can't remember the guy's name. He was on Elite 11. But he had him, he was working with Cam to get Cam ready for the draft. And so, you know, I mean, he started working with Cam a week after the national championship game in January. And he worked with Cam all the way up, you know, through the April draft. And so in a lot of ways, Cam had that one-on-one quarterback coaching that a lot of guys don't get until they get into training camp.
Right.
So personally, I think that's one of the reasons that attributes to his fast start. But even I, who was very optimistic in Cam, he surpassed my wildest expectations in terms of his first game.
Absolutely. When I looked at what Cam Newton would be able to do his first year, and again, not to compare them because they've been compared so much, but I anticipated a Vince Young type of impact where he would be able to will them to some wins. He'd be able to win some games in some unorthodox ways. He would still be a little bit rough around the edges from the pocket, but he'd make up for that with his ability to move the chains with his legs, you know. But the way he was tossing it, I mean, he threw some beautiful passes. The one touchdown he had to Smith, was from about 20, 30 yards out, man. It was just a gorgeous pass. I mean, it had a gorgeous arc on it and just dropped right in there. Like you said, man, Steve Smith has to be giddy. I mean, just giddy. He's basically been in wide receiver purgatory the last 3 or 4 years in Carolina. And he finally has a guy who looks like he can get him the ball and get him the ball pretty well. I heard an interview with Kevin Kolb on the radio today. I think I was listening to Van Pelt, Russillo and Van Pelt. And they asked the question of Carl, how was the defense responding to Cam Newton when they came off the field? Like, what did he hear? What kind of things did he hear the defense saying? And, you know, what Carl responded with, he said the defense, when they were coming off the field, they were really impressed. And they were starting to get a feeling like, okay, this kid is getting hot. This kid is getting the rhythm. And Kyle pointed out that, you know, we watch the highlights and we see the big throws that he made and we see guys running wide open and him hitting those guys. But Kyle made it a point to say that Cam was making a lot of efficient throws, those throws that you don't see on. You don't pass for 422 yards just throwing bombs, you know. So again, I think he's a lot further along. I saw a promise. I saw, from a fantasy perspective, I saw potential points. I saw a guy who was good enough and who had some intangibles as far as being able to move with his legs, but still threw a pretty enough ball that he could, you know, manage, he could get his 200 yards every now and then. But 422, I'm with you on that. I wouldn't have called that in my wildest dreams. You know, I have him on the bench on one of my teams, and you know, I had him on the bench for this week, and I wish I had played him. I still won in that particular matchup, but if he would have gave me 250 and two touchdowns and a pick, I'd have been cool with that. But 422, it's welcome. It's a welcome addition. So,
right.
You know, we're going to have to extend his contract because he was on a 10-day contract when I drafted him. So, yeah, you know, props to Cam for putting in the work, and hopefully he continues to put in that work and he continues to progress. You know, one thing I will say, we may be seeing a new trend because Bradford came out of the gate last year and he was really successful. Stafford has been really successful in a short amount of time. A lot of young quarterbacks are coming around a lot quicker. You look at Josh Freeman. Even if you go back to Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco when they came in, a lot of these younger guys who have the talent are coming along pretty quick. A Colt McCoy who is kind of taking a big step. So there are a lot of young quarterbacks who are coming along much quicker than quarterbacks in the past. You know, I think we had gotten to a point where we thought that the learning curve for quarterbacks, you know, we thought we had a good idea of the slope of that learning curve, but I think it's changing a little bit, and maybe offensive coordinators have figured out a better way to manage the play calling, to limit the decisions that have to be made, but still provide some sort of framework where they still can move the ball down the field without being too vanilla. But it's working for a lot of these young guys. And I also think a lot of these young guys are beginning to realize that you have to put in the amount of work you have to put in. I think they're realizing the amount of time you have to study and you have to focus on honing your craft, and that's what they're committing to. And franchises are being a little bit more – there's more stability. You know, guys are – they realize having a kid have six different coordinators in his first 3 years is probably not the best way to go.
Right.
So – you know, I think organizations are making better decisions all the way around.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we just kind of – I mean, you look up and, okay, we're right in the middle of a trend. And before you mention it, I didn't notice it. You know, people had talked about it the last 2 or 3 years, but you're right. You look at most quarterbacks who have been drafted in the first round, you know, probably 3 out of every 4 are playing within their first year, you know, and by their second year, they're the guy. doesn't bode very well for my man Donovan and in Minnesota with Christian Ponder there, and honestly I think that's one of the reasons they got rid of Garrard in addition to his you know, he was still in money with that $9 million contract, but you know, down in Jacksonville, you know, I think teams are kind of at the point of, hey, we lose a couple of games, let's get this young guy in here,
right?
You know, where before, you know, when Peyton Manning was coming up, I mean, he was really a maverick in a sense, because most guys sat for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're right. I think we're in the middle of a trend changing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how these guys continue to progress and continue to develop. And you know, everybody's already talking about the Colts tanking to pick up, you know, Andrew Luck. We'll see how that goes for them. They look bad. They look pretty bad. You feel bad for guys like Reggie Wayne. But as bad as they look, the rest of that team's got to step up and rally around Collins. It's just, I mean, some of those guys are going to get exposed, you know, because Peyton covered up a lot of flaws. He put guys in position to do what they do best, and that made them probably look better than they really are. So we're going to see about the Colts, though. We got about 15 minutes here before our guest comes on. Looks like we got Ray joining us real quick, so I'm going to get him on. Ray, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Welcome. We got Ray on the line. What's going on with you?
Nada. I was just sitting and listening to some of the commentary. I think one of the things that we might be forgetting, you know, with the strike and everything, and as much success as some of these quarterbacks had this weekend, you know, it might be also partially due to the fact that there wasn't a lot of, you know, off-season training, off-season workouts. And, you know, while the offense seemed to be on, you know, the right page, some of these defenses certainly didn't. You know, even defenses you thought were going to be a little bit more stiff just simply gave up a ton of points.
Yeah, I think you're right. The defenses are, and usually the defenses are a little bit more ahead of where the offenses are. You know, I think, and I really don't know what to attribute it to. I think you're right. I think the lack of an offseason had an effect on that. And maybe it's the nature of defense where you're constantly reacting most of the time. But I definitely think there's a tremendous effect. I mean, the special teams, definitely. Some of the special teams for some of these teams definitely were affected by the lockout. I mean, because I'm sure when they got into camp, they weren't spending the time that they spent previously, especially with the time constraints on practices and the amount of practices. I'm sure they weren't spending as much time giving reps to the special teams as they have in the past. But, yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Speaking of special teams, you know, one of the things that I thought was, you know, all of the run backs this week, you know, when that ball was lined up 5 yards back and they were kicking it, if they kicked it 5 yards back and ended up 5 yards into the end zone, that guy didn't run it out. Now all of a sudden they moved the ball up 5 yards and they're kicking it 5 yards into the end zone, and these guys are taking off. And I wonder,
that's
you
right.
know, they spent a lot of time during the off season or during, you know, preseason talking about how there's not going to be any run backs and everything's going to start at the 20, and Belichick almost, you know, stated that, you know, they didn't want anything but touchbacks. And, you know, these young cats are grabbing that ball and taking off running. And I think all of these special teams on both sides, I mean, who told them young men to just, you know, catch that ball at the 107-yard line and run, you know? And just, you know, you just look at that and go, you know, where's the coaching there? You're going to see some different things this week, I'm sure. You know, and as much as there were a couple run backs, I bet you somebody has got to be at practice this week going, don't even think about it this week, because half of them, I think half of them, you know, the kickoff team realized that ball's 106 yards. He ain't running that back. And then they were like, oh, shit, he's running it back. So this week, they're going to just hit him. You know, this week, ain't going to be no off guard. Those guys are going to go head on. You know, especially if you were one of those teams that got ran back on. You know, cats are putting up records. You know, they were putting up record, touchdowns this week. You know,
as a former kick and punt returner in high school, I think what's happening is that with the kick going back further, the defense has a longer way to run. With the kick coming quicker, so the defense seems to be a little bit more spread out, and they're coming upon the returner quicker, and that decreases their reaction time. So it's harder for them to get into their lanes.
Right.
Because
but I think
they're right there.
They weren't getting into their lane simply because they thought that ball was kicked deep enough into the end zone that that guy wouldn't
right.
possibly grab it and take
yeah.
off.
Yeah, and the kick returner,
you know,
because he has that extra space now, because he's 5 yards back in the end zone, he can see the field a little bit better.
Yeah, but
instead of getting through the defense and coming clear at the 40 on the other side, they're coming clear at the 50 now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of those guys by the 50-yard line, they were in the clear. And usually,
but how many times
guys
they,
aren't in the clear
until
they get past the kicker who's hanging out at the 35-yard line.
Well, sure. How many times they're gonna get dropped at the 10 or 15, and then they're just gonna be waving that stuff off? You know.
Yeah,
or
and
we'll
that's eventually where it's
20.
Gonna come to. That's because I think the special teams are gonna adjust. They're gonna adjust.
Right.
I think what happened, what we saw this weekend was that the guys returning the kicks, I think, were kind of caught off guard by how quickly they were in the other team's territory. Like, when you cover in a kick, you used to run it for a little bit, then you start, there's a certain pace to it. Then you start to break down. Now you're looking for guys to tackle. And that happened quicker because now the blockers are right there. The blockers are still where they still right there. You know,
right.
So they get into you before you used to it. You're used to picking up a certain amount of speed. You're used to getting certain ways up the field before you get to the blockers. Now they're already there. So it's going to be an adjustment because that's a different element that I think people haven't thought about is that for the defense, you know, you're running and they kind of – it's like they're overrunning it. It's like they're already
right.
overrunning it. You know,
and
I agree. I think sometimes they got caught off guard because you see a cat, you know, catch the ball. Go ahead.
There's going to be one defensive coordinator that says this week, look, don't kick it into the end zone anymore. If they're going to stand back there at the white line and beyond and get set to catch this ball, kick it to the five and make him come up because we already got guys there. We're going to have guys there sooner. Let him think he can return that ball. Let him think that so that his, you know, right now they're standing in the end zone. They're playing center field. They're waiting for this ball to come down. Make him run to that ball. Make him run up to the 2 yard line. Kick it a little bit shorter, and you'll have somebody there. And when he don't look up to wave that defender off, that defender's going to clean him up. And that's how I,
yeah.
you know, if I was one of those teams that got one returned on me, I'd be telling my kicker, look, unless you can actually put it out of the end zone, don't try to kick it to the end zone because that's where he's standing there waiting. Make him move on
yeah.
the ball. Make him run
yeah.
and make him look at the same time and see if we can't light
because,
his ass up.
Because the defense, man, it's just an odd feeling because the guy is so deep in the end zone. It's like,
right.
okay, I got to run all the way to the end zone to get this dude. And I don't
right.
think they're used to that. I think they get to that end zone and they think, okay, they mentally, you know, you kind of let down a little bit. And I think it'll take a moment, but the special teams will adjust. But that's an interesting
right.
point you bring up. It's a very interesting point you bring up with all the kickoffs. So we got a couple minutes before our guest gets on. Ray, what else jumped out at you out of this first weekend?
Things that you thought
were surprising.
I think, you know, I didn't think that the Colts would be as bad as they were, which is a testament to the fact that, you know, Collins did say that this is the most complicated offense he's ever seen. So, you know, they shouldn't have been as bad as they were. And again, the amount of points and the amount of offense that was generated this week tells me that the next time that they negotiate these contracts, they may want to get it done a little bit sooner because there were some very good teams that didn't look very good at all. I can't believe that Pittsburgh is as bad as what they looked like on Sunday. And I can't believe that there's a lot of teams that I didn't think would come out of the box with the turnovers that they had. You know, it seemed like some offenses were a heck of a lot better than they really are. And then there were some offenses that just did not get off of the block. And so this is pro football. And usually you would expect these teams to be a lot more prepared than they were. And that just tells me that these off-season workouts that the players complain about so much are a necessity if you want to be a championship football team. You know, they talked to Breeze, you know, about, you know, his off-season workouts and how he actually funded some of these workouts, you know, putting guys up and bringing guys together during the strike so that his team would be more prepared, you know. And they asked Aaron Rodgers if he thought, you know, what Breeze did was going to be effective, you know, and if that was the thing to do. And Aaron Rodgers was like, bullshit, you know. We had our practices. We're going to be just as prepared. So, you know, without a coaching staff, these guys don't seem to be able to do it on their own. And as they go through these contracts again, they should realize that what they're putting on the field at the beginning of the season on a short set, you know, because of the strike and whatnot, isn't really the product that they promised. This weekend's football was fun to watch, but it really wasn't good football, I didn't think. You know, it was, you know, you had Brady putting up 500 and some yards. You had both Green Bay and New Orleans just lighting it up. You know, that's fun to watch, but is it really good football? You know, is that kind of a entertainment special. If these things will start to correct themselves soon, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that they produce good fantasy weeks. But
right.
Yeah, whether or not it was good football, you know, that's up for debate. But it was entertaining as hell.
I truly
was entertained. You know, from Brady's performance to Cam Newton's performance, hell, even Chad Henne, like Phil T, like you said, Chad Henne looked the best he's ever looked.
Sure. But and let me go back to Cam Newton for a minute. I think Cam Newton's performance this weekend may be exactly who he is. You know, a lot of these pundits, you know, talk about him, you know, maybe not having a good year. Maybe, you know, he's not going to be the – I think what he showed you is that you know, he's probably on any given Sunday, he may be the best athlete on the field. And he's going to do the things that other guys can't do. This is a big man. This isn't Dante Culpepper. This isn't, you know, this isn't Donovan McNabb. This isn't Tom Brady. This isn't, you know, Steve Young. This guy is just a physical specimen. He's 6'5", 260 pounds? 250
yeah.
pounds? You know, this guy is huge. You know, I used to think Dante Culpepper, just because he was bigger than linebackers, you know, was intimidating. But this young man is just, you know, an athlete. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, you know, if he wasn't playing football, you'd think that he could be a bodybuilder. He's like Terrell Owens, you know, that physical being. When he matures into, you know, this body, this kid might be truly unstoppable. He's a 6'5", you know, perhaps a 6'5" Michael Vick. When I get in trouble, I'll tuck the ball and run, or I can just wing it. And the other thing is that I don't like to get beat. You know, he didn't throw for 400-some yards because he stayed within the system. He did things that other quarterbacks weren't doing. And I think
yeah,
he was closer. I'm betting that he's closer to his performance, not the number, but the results. He kept him in the game. He was closer in his performance than I think Brady was in his performance. Brady's not going to throw for 500 every week. Brady's going to do what he has to do. And then you know, but it's kind of like Dawkins, you know. One night I'm going to give you 40, one night I'm going to give you 10. That's, you know, I can't do it every night. I think this
right.
young Cam Newton, he's just trying to win. It ain't about numbers. It isn't about anything else. He's just trying to win a ball game. And he gets caught, you know. I think if I think he has that much natural talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with you, man. I can't argue with you at all on that. Now, Ray, are you going to hang on for a moment? We got our fantasy expert coming in. You going to hang on with us?
Sure.
All right,
my
excellent.
Phone don't die.
All right. Well, I hope you got a good battery. We got our fantasy expert, Eric Hamilton, on the line. Eric, I'm going to pass it to my man, Phil T. He can introduce you and give you a good introduction, let our listeners really know about your history. You know, put them up on your record. Go ahead, Phil T. I'm going to talk to you.
Yeah, we got a real special treat tonight. I was reading something online the other day that a Gallup poll said that 3 out of every 5 true football fans are currently involved in fantasy football. And so this is certainly a growing trend, and I know all three of us, we pride ourselves in being good fantasy football players as well as commissioners. And we got a treat today because we got Eric Hamilton on the line from Southwest Michigan. And let me just give you a little background on my man. He has ran a very successful fantasy league for the past 4 or 5 years with essentially the same group of guys, and this is a cash league. So from a player standpoint, he has won, I think he's a 3 or 4 out of the past 5 years in this league. I looked it up earlier today in Yahoo, and he is in the top 1% of the 1 million plus currently fantasy football players if you look at his track record over the past 5 years. So, you know, a real sports guys, we like to bring in, you know, experts that are real sports guys. You know, Matthew Berry, the guy from ESPN and also Yahoo, he's in the top 6%. This is a guy that gets the opportunity to do this as his full-time job. So a lot of our listeners have mentioned via Facebook and Twitter that they, you know, kind of like to hear our take on fantasy football and get some tips. So we reached on out to Southwest Michigan, and we're bringing in Eric, the guru from KZoo. How you doing tonight, man?
Hey, man, I'm fantastic, gentlemen. Nice show, nice show. I've been listening to you guys, man. You guys got it going on.
Cool.
Appreciate
it. We got a couple of questions here for you, man, just to get the conversation going.
Yes, sir.
Now, again, a little bit more background. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I'm gonna put y'all on some of the moves my man Hamilton has made over the last couple of years. So back in 2007, he picked up Braylon Edwards in the 9th round, Derek Anderson off waivers right before the first week, and also picked up Wes Welker in the 11th round that year, and also Brandon Marshall in the mid-round. Brandon Marshall had 102 receptions. Wes Welker had 112 receptions. And these are the only years Braylon Edwards and Derek Anderson made the Pro Bowl. Now, these might be household names now, but they weren't a couple of years ago. Additionally, last year he picked up LeSean McCoy late, as well as young Chris Johnson that came and got 2,000 yards a couple of years ago. So, Eric, I mean, these are some amazing moves. You know, every fantasy player has, you know, like we have one or two of these underneath our belt, but for you, it seems like every year you're able to kind of sniff out these big numbers that make a splash into the scene. Tell us your secret.
You know, Phil, we are in the same league, baby, but,
yeah.
You know, it comes down to, man, realistically, man, it comes down to quite a bit of researching, man, multiple sites, and then a little bit of luck as well. You know, I pay a lot of attention to preseason and what's going on before the season starts. You know, what kind of rapport the quarterback has with the receiver, you know, who they're sharing rooms with. I mean, I want to get as detailed as possible because that's where that rapport comes. You know, it probably might be extreme to some, man, but I want to know as much about a player coming in the league or whatever have you. I want to know as much about him and his quarterback as possible. And then, obviously, for receivers, we play in a points-per-reception league, so I'm trying to find a receiver that, or a running back that can catch out of the backfield. That's key. So I think it all comes down to, man, it's all about doing a ton of research and mixing that with a little bit of luck.
So what was it about Brandon Marshall that, you know, this young guy out of University of Central Florida, his first year he caught 20 balls. The next year he came up with 102 balls, and all of a sudden we all knew about Brandon Marshall. I mean, what was it about him that made you want to pick him up right before he had that big year?
You know, it's a couple things, man. I actually seen at that time Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler had a good thing going on in that offseason. I can't remember exactly what article I read it from, but I heard that they were roommates that summer. And that Brandon Marshall looked really good. Obviously, he's a physical specimen to begin with. So I'm always attracted to big receivers like my boy Megatron out of Detroit. And, you know, your Andre Johnson, those kind of guys. But for Brandon Marshall, you know, it was that he had that good rapport with Jay Cutler. And we all know about his arm. He can sling the ball. And then again, he's a physical specimen. So that was enough. I'd take a chance on him late in the draft.
Okay. So moving on, a lot of guys are now part of individual defensive player leagues.
Yeah.
And for our listeners out there that may not be part of one, what that is, you know, traditional setup in fantasy football is, you know, you have, like, it's pretty much based on offensive players. You know, running backs, receivers, tight ends, you know, you get a kicker, you get a defensive unit. But over the past couple of years, there's been a trend to include defensive players to a lesser degree, but still include them. Now, for a lot of guys, you know, I recall hearing Marcus and Ray talk about this a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, this is kind of new. So guys are still trying to figure out how to make that move, you know, in terms of finding the best individual defensive player. Typically, you can pick up a DB, a linebacker, defensive lineman, or some mix of the three or four. Eric, walk us through on draft day where you typically draft these guys and how you select them.
Yeah, you know, this year I actually took a different strategy because the longer we do the defensive player leagues, the better you kind of understand, you know, who are the consistent tacklers. And, you know, through the draft and through the preseason, you can kind of find out who's going to be those good up-and-coming tacklers. So, I mean, I kind of took my time, and I didn't draft like I normally would go for. Everybody knows about Pat Willis. I mean, he's a tackle machine. He's, you know, pretty much in the top five linebackers or IDPs over the past 3 or 4 years. You know, but I really think as popular as this becoming, you know, you have to start reaching outside that box because guys are reaching for folks like Patrick Willis in like the 5th and 6th round nowadays. I think Pat Willis went in our 6th round this year. So I actually have a couple sleepers I just want to kind of throw out. I mean, everybody knows linebacker-wise, Patrick Willis, Lawrence Timmons are some of the big beasts. But keep an eye on DeQuayle Jackson over in Cleveland. This guy is a monster. He had surgery last year, so he missed. He had a torn pectoral muscle in his chest. But the guy is a freaking monster. He's a freaking nature. This guy is going to be awesome. And, you know, as far as DBs, you got your standard Jeremiah Bell, TJ Ward. I mean, they do their thing. But keep an eye out for Craig Dahl out of St. Louis Rams. That guy's a tackle machine. The Rams are probably going to be down most of the season. So he's going to have plenty of time to tackle the running backs coming in the 3rd and 4th quarter, those garbage tackles. Last one is Cam Chancellor out of, I think he's in Seattle. But again, he's a big guy. I think he's 6'2", and this guy loves to tackle. He's going to rack up those the tackle points in the league. Those are just a couple sleepers on the defensive side.
When you're building your squad and when you're drafting your team, how soon do you start reaching for these defensive players? Because if you're just coming into IDP, you realize that you still want those running backs, you still want that bench. How soon do you start drafting these defensive players? And how important are they truly, you know, in the overall? Because, you know, I'm assuming that it's going to depend on what kind of points they're capable of scoring. You know, some of us are so new to it that we're still afraid to start drafting them yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it goes back to your point structure. And one of the leagues or the league I'm commissioner in, we get 2 points for a tackle, 1 point for an assist tackle. So, you know, the top linebackers are typically the ones that are going to make the most tackles, you know, bottom line. So, you know, Patrick Willis is going to get you, you know, maybe 200 points in a season because he's going to put up in between 12 and 18 points a game. So with that being said, that stacks up to a pretty much a top ranking, a tier two running back in our league.
Right.
You know, so you gotta go through what I actually do each year is I'll go through and I'll look up 2010. I'll be 2010 and I'll say, okay, who were the top 25 performers throughout the league? How many were quarterbacks? How many were running backs? How many were receivers? How many tight ends? Defensive individuals, etc. And then that's how I begin to formulate my plan for the future. And then I don't know what kind of strategies you guys use, but there's a lot of different ways, like value-based strategy. Again, I don't want to get too adept with it, but, I mean, it's a lot of different ways. I don't really recommend jumping for it. Yeah, no, I know. Phil, yeah, because Phil is a monster regardless, man.
Phil's taking notes right now. I know him.
Oh, yeah, I'm taking notes.
He's a monster.
I got my orange highlighter
man.
Out. Still know the ropes regardless, man. So I know he's already. He's
yeah, real quick. I want to interrupt. We're gonna keep it going with Eric for a moment. I just want to bring my man D Wills in. He hopped on, so I want to bring him in and bring him into the fold real quick and have him jump in with questions so he don't surprise people, catch people off guard, like who the hell is this? So yeah, D Wills, you there?
I'm in, and I'm out here actually putting some gas in my car. I feel like Tony Saragusa on the sidelines of Fox. But I love this segment, and I love the fact you're talking about IDPs because we have a long-standing league, about 10 years, and we recently went to IDP, and it's created a Civil War-type atmosphere, some struggles because it is new to the group. Ray knows. I mean, we got folks, we got 10 years of of a league going on, and folks want to walk away, and I'm beginning to get comfortable with it. So I appreciate your analysis in terms of that.
Yeah, to precursor that, too. It's not just about the IDPs. I think everybody, we started this last year, and everybody was on board. But what we did is, you know, we have a commissioner that is bent on truly recreating the wheel, and we asked for input, you know, as to how the league should be structured, you know. He went, whereas, you know, we were just a strictly offensive, and, you know, and they pick up your defensive team. He really emphasized this IDP to a point where, you know, it overpowered the league. So it isn't that we're so against an IDP. It's just that it went such, you know, strong direction. In hindsight, I can't say that by overemphasizing the defense as much as he has, we probably, you know, a little bit ahead of the learning curve, because last year, you know, we really had to get into those defensive players a lot more, or just getting into them at all. I mean, we went from just picking a straight defense to realizing where our points are going to be scored from. And so, you know, it's a long-standing league, but, you know, it's been commissioned by the same person. The problems with the league aren't with the IDP. Trust me.
IDP definitely takes a little while to get used to. It's a different flow. It's a different flavor. It makes you actually have to research more than just the offensive players. IDP makes you research the game. And, you know, especially on the IDP side, when you're looking at, you know, linebackers being the biggest producers, even though we have our linemen and our DBs, I mean, it's about looking at things as in-depth as, all right, which linebackers are out there for third-down passing situations? Because obviously if you get a linebacker that, Phil, don't listen to this piece, but if you get a linebacker that simply is a run stopper and they're leaving third downs, all right, you're missing, you know, a quarter of the game. So IDP's changed the game totally. It's a totally different mentality. It takes a little while to get used to, but once you have it, it's extremely fun.
Eric, let me ask this quick question, and I'll jump out. But would you say because of with the, you know, if we think about maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, everybody were drafting running backs as dominant positions, but with running backs splitting carries and the inability to really project those trends, do you think, you know, having IDP actually creates another element of scoring, given that we don't have the same level of predictability with, like, our running backs? You know, you can name maybe one or two or three running backs that you just know. You know, I remember back in the Priest home days, you had a whole slew of running backs.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
IDP actually allows for you to comp. How do you feel about that in terms of the way the running back has changed and the need to maybe use IDP?
Well, I think a couple things. That kind of leads into not just IDP, but the PPR leagues as well, the point per reception. So, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, the running backs were probably your first 3 to 4 draft picks because running backs were heavy. I mean, that was what it was about. When points per reception came into play, now your running backs that catch out of the backfield and some of your main receivers like a Wes Welker a few years ago or your Andre Johnson now, those are guys that are consistently getting a point for every time they catch the ball on top of everything that they do after when they catch it and all the touchdowns. So it has evolved where, you know, again, your first 5 or 6 draft picks are going to be, you know, 1 through maybe 6 or 7 are going to be running backs. But I can guarantee Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson are sniffing right up there in that top 10 now, as opposed to the first 10 being specifically running back.
And that goes back to your whole idea of value-based drafting, is just realizing who those top 100 players are going to be and trying to fill your positions with top 5 players in each position. And
absolutely,
whether it be on the offensive or defensive side of the ball, it comes down to, you know, how you manage your draft and how you wedge these players in there. There's no reason to go for your third running back if some of the top 5 linebackers are coming off of the board. You better reach up there and grab one, because you don't want to be without one. It's fine to have, you know, a top 20 or even 2 top 20s, but the idea is to come away from that draft with as many top 5 players at every position and round your team out as opposed to having a bench that you can depend on. You may still lose your starting running back.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you're
fortunate enough to grab the right running back in the right system and a handcuff that you can get way back in the draft, you're better off for going that third running back that might be a starter on another team that just sits on your bench and get that linebacker that's going to score you some points.
Absolutely.
We got a question coming in from a listener in Texas right now. Wanted us to ask Eric. Eric, do you, like, when you're picking your linebackers and defensive linemen and DBs, do you take in consideration what kind of setup their defense is in terms of a 4-3 or a 3-4 or a hybrid? Do you kind of take that into account when you're picking defensive linemen and also linebackers?
Linemen, yes, but linebackers and DBs, no. So with the system, in my opinion, the system doesn't matter as much. It just depends on, you know, obviously it's going to be based on who you're playing that week as well. You know, if you're playing the Ravens, they're going to run that doggone ball. The linebacker's going to get a lot of tackles. You know, depending on if you're playing the Colts, you're not going to get many tackles from the linebacker spot. You'll probably get more from the cornerbacks or something like that. So that's a consideration, but it's kind of tricky. So the formation doesn't matter as much, their defensive scheme. It's about, do you have people in positions to make plays? And if you got a linebacker, a middle linebacker that is a dominant player, a Patrick Willis, a Ray Lewis, et cetera, those guys are going to consistently make plays. And even if you're on a bad team, you're James Laurinaitis, he's going to be out on the field a long time. He's going to make plays. He's going to be out there. That defense is going to get ran on. So I put more value on what that team's record is and how long that defense is going to be on the field as opposed to the defensive scheme. And as far as defensive linemen, just one thing on defensive linemen, that's a weird position because defensive linemen aren't known for grabbing a lot of tackles. And if you're in a tackle-heavy league, then hopefully, you know, you have the sacks give you quite a bit of points to kind of offset that. And that was one change we made this year, Phil, is we added a little bit more points to the sack. So I think we're up to maybe 6 points for a sack. But nevertheless, for a defensive lineman, now you're looking for somebody that's just going to get sacks because a defensive lineman isn't going to consistently make tackles, but they will get to that quarterback. So you got your guys like your Jared Allen, your Trent Cole that are going to get to the quarterback, your Justin Tuck, you know, like a Charles Johnson out of Carolina for a sleeper. Those kind of guys are going to get to the quarterback, won't get you many tackles. So a lot of times with the defensive lineman, you're feast or famine.
So do you prefer linebackers that rush the quarterback, or do you prefer the linebackers that get you more tackles? So
I want
say like a DeMarcus Ware.
See, he's different. If DeMarcus Ware was considered a lineman, and in some leagues he is, but Yahoo he's not. If he was considered a lineman, he would be just a phenomenal lineman because he gets the quarterback. But for a linebacker, he doesn't get enough tackles consistently to really compete with the linebackers. He won't even be a top 20 linebacker. However, Lee, the new guy, Caucasian guy in the middle, he actually produces. I mean, he is going to be a stud. He's going to produce a lot. I don't know about real world, or even real world. He had a nice interception last game. But in the fantasy world, he is going to get a ton of tackles. I think it's David Lee.
Well, I want to say I want to say you validated my Laurinaitis pick. That's all I want to say, and thank you.
but you also got to tell him it was a, you know, one of that blind squirrel kind of thing. You just poked in there.
It was a blind squirrel. I will give you that. I was like, damn. But my reasoning was his reasoning. I was like, they're going to get run on a lot. And you know Steven Jackson going to get hurt. And
yep.
he's going to make a lot of tackles. And they emphasizing defense. My rationale was about the same. So it was blind.
Okay.
But
let me ask you a question. Uh-oh. Is that my phone or is that it?
I don't know. We're good, though.
Okay, listen.
Everybody's still here.
Being in an IDP league and being in other leagues, obviously, I could tell by your answers that this isn't the only league you're in. What format do you find to be the most user-friendly if there's some folks out there that have never played fantasy football, or maybe they've only played for a short time, do you prefer Yahoo League? Do you prefer an ESPN league? Do you prefer CBS? Is there a preferred format, a site that you like over others, and why?
I actually only have experience with Yahoo. I have not participated in ESPN or NFL. So I have not experienced those other leagues, so I can't tell you how, you know, the differences in between or which one is better. Obviously, since I've been using Yahoo, it's easy at this point. But, so, yeah, I don't have much experience with the other couple of sites.
So, you know, for the sake of finalizing an argument that I have with our league, Yahoo puts on a sign, IDP League.
Yes.
Yes. And D Wheels knows what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about. That's right.
Yeah.
We're going to take that back to our commissioner.
Exactly.
Are you guys on a different league? I'm assuming you guys aren't on Yahoo.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. Go ahead.
Eric, I got a question for you. You know, so from a fantasy player standpoint, you know, you kind of spoken to that. But the other part of your success is, you know, being a member of your league, and I've been in tons of different leagues. You know, the good thing about your league is even though guys – well, first of all, you've been the commissioner for the same league for at least 5 years. I've been in for most of that time. And, you know, 90-95% of the guys of our 12-14 team league is the same guys. You know, and I know Marcus, Ray, and Devon have had a similar situation. But one of the issues that I've had in other leagues that you really don't have in your league that I've seen is, you know, tell the listeners, especially those that may be thinking about developing a league or a young commissioner, how do you keep guys engaged? You know, I mean, we'll have guys that will have a 3-7 record, but they're still getting after it. They're not mailing it in. They're still setting their lineups. They're not making any bogus trades for the most part. You know, from a commissioner, how do you develop that kind of environment and culture?
Well, I think it's a couple things. One, you got to have some pretty good managers, folks that actually, you know, like the game of football and are competitive. Because I feel like this might have been a little bit before you, one of our great friends that we grew up with, a guy you used to throw the ball to, won't mention his name on air, but, you know, he asked me one year, why do you guys take this so serious? I don't want to play. And I knew from then on he probably won't be in the league next year. I just won't invite him back in. Because, you know, hey, we're here to win. We're here to take this serious. We're playing for money. We want to win. I mean, we're going to have a great time. We'll have fun. But, you know, we want to win. So, you know, we have a great group of guys that are in our league, and they're all competitive. We talk a little trash, but we all have fun. But I think the other thing that I try to do every year is I try to improve upon our league. So a couple of years ago, you know, ideally you never want to get in a situation where it's the last 3 or 4 weeks of the year, you got four teams out of the mix totally, and they're just packing it in. They're bye weeks, basically. You know, so we want to keep the league competitive. So remember, we actually changed to the two-division format, where we have basically a high school league and a JV division, where it's two different divisions, and the winner of each division gets a first-round bye pick, a first-round bye, basically, in the playoffs. So, I mean, and things like this year, we've added we increased the entry fee, but we're doing the team that has the highest point total from each week gets $46. So, basically, the entry fee being $100, $50 of that entry fee or $600 is going toward the regular season, $600 is going toward the championship or the playoffs. So, again, it's just down to just keeping it competitive, trying to come up with different ways. If we find a problem, like, you know, people vetoing trades for no apparent reason, you know, so what we did to try to get to the bottom of that, as opposed to having people just hate, is if somebody proposes a trade, I'll put it out there. We have 48 hours to vote on that trade. If you feel like this is an unfair trade, you actually have to put your name in that post and say why you feel like it's unfair, as opposed to people just hitting the vote no button. You know, it's a secretive. I mean, if you want to veto a trade, let's put it out there and say why. If it's an unfair trade, then that's fine. But if you just want to hate just because you think this team was going to have a better player, you know, well, hey, you just got to put it out there. You got to deal with it. So, again, it just goes back to trying to make everybody accountable, improve upon the year before, and have more fun than when you did the year before.
See, we
Eric, talk a little bit about right now the team that comes in last place. They have a penalty, which I think is another reason why you keep guys engaged throughout the entire season. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I actually don't think that was approved, Phil. I don't think we got basically in our league, whenever we try to make a new policy or a new rule, we'll vote on it, and the majority of the league is going to rule. So if we get seven people that votes for a certain thing, you know, that rule gets passed. So I don't think that was actually passed, so I don't think we had enough votes.
Great concept,
but what was,
though. Talk about the
yeah,
concept.
You know, we had a couple of the idea that was on the table was, in our league, we've got a couple of people that have been on standby waiting to get in the league, but I try to keep our league the same prior to, you know, reaching out to anybody else. So what we wanted to do, we had a couple of people, a couple of teams that consistently were toward that bottom end, is, again, we want to have a more competitive league. So we came up with the idea of, all right, the bottom one team or maybe two teams, I'm not sure exactly which one it was, there's a one-year ban on that team to allow fresh meat or fresh teams to come in.
I like that.
And then after that 1 year, you know, they can come back to the league. But again, you know, if the point is to keep things fresh, you want to bring in people that are young and hungry and they're ready to roll.
But is that was that to try to correct, you know, some of those bye weeks at the end? Because we've, you know, Marcus and Devon and I are in a pay league, and it's probably one of the most quiet leagues that you can be involved in. If there's 25 posts at the end of the year, somebody went off on a tangent. So it's not the biggest trash talking league, and it's also one of the fairest leagues as far as trades that are approved. I don't know that we've ever had a trade that was vetoable. You know, it was
okay.
Too lopsided that we couldn't do it. I mean, it's a group of 12 that that obviously play a lot of or have played a lot of fantasy football, or at least understand the concept.
Sure.
In one of our other leagues, and so so to have a rule like that is really probably unnecessary, because the 12 players, we just replaced perhaps the first one in the last, you know, 6 years. And luckily for us, it was probably the least competitive person. I mean, he was a Phillies fan, and so you can imagine what his team looked like year in and year out. And the only time he had success, you know, was when Philly had success. So he's out now. We have another individual in. Our college league, or what we call our executive league, our oldest league that Devon and I are involved in, it is a free league. It is a prestige league. And, you know, I've had trades vetoed simply because people didn't want to compete. They looked at the team and said, you know, I may have had, you know, three of the top 10 running backs. I may have been, you know, in first or second as far as overall points. I may even have been in first place at the time. I don't think I was. I may have been in second. But I had a trade vetoed years back where I tried to trade one of those running backs to the team that was in first place and had Tom Brady, who was blowing things up. Now, granted, I would have probably ran away with the league.
Mm-hmm.
But the trade was not vetoable. But because it's not a money league and we're just playing for fun, these cats just scratched it. They were like, there's no way in hell we're going to let you have that team. When I look at a trade, you know, when I personally, and Devon will tell you this, when I look at a trade, when Devon sends me a trade, regardless of what my needs may be, I won't accept his trade if I'm going to give him a team that I don't think I can beat. You understand what I'm saying? There's no need for me to make that trade if at the end result, all I do is show up a category or two that I'm missing. But in the end, I give team or give Devon a team that I cannot beat. I don't veto trades on that theory. But, I mean, there has to be some guideline that you use. And as a commissioner, how do you combat, you know, some of these lopsided trades? And how do you pull back and say, you know, that's not a vetoable trade?
We actually used to have, and you bring up some good points, Ray, we had a couple of trades that were vetoed just because, you know, and and the way that I resolved it was to put that post out. We haven't, I think last year was the first year we did the post, and we didn't have any issues. I don't think anybody even posts anything. I don't think we had any posts for anybody vetoing a trade. So for our league, that cleaned that piece up. But even if they wanted to try to veto the trade, it's still okay, but the majority of the league would have to veto this trade, not just, and I think Yahoo automatically has three people veto a trade and it gets denied, but I think it should be the majority of the league, and our league is the majority of the league, so it's actually six, not including yourself. Well, right. Actually it'd be, yeah, so six, so 10 people, yeah, so it'd be six. So that was the way that I corrected our problem. If people were continuing to veto for no reason, if you say that the majority is going to do it and the majority of the league, I'm one that run the league where it is, you know, simply a democracy. You know, we vote on it, and if I tried to implement a rule this year and the league shot my rule and shot my schedule down, you know, I wanted to go to an NFL-style schedule where you play your division twice and you play outside your division, you know, one time. And the league stood up and voted, and the majority won. So we went back to everybody playing each other. So I try to keep it open in our league, and it worked out pretty good. Give everybody a voice. I don't want to try to run the scene. I don't want to make it seem like I run a dictatorship. I want it to be open, and I want everybody to have fun and fair.
Hey, well, hey, Mark, tape on that one. Mark, tape on that one.
There's no liquid courage. There's no cyber courage. If you're going to veto something, you need to speak on it and make it public.
Yeah. Put it out there. And Phil, we didn't have anybody speak up last year when we put that post out. Nobody spoke up the entire year. No trades were vetoed. And that year before, about every trade had some kind of veto effect to it.
Yeah, we need to mark the tape on that one, y'all. We got to share this with the commish, Ray.
So we're going to go into our pick six. Eric, feel free to stay on with us. We go into our weekly segment, Pick Six, where we pick six games, three college, three pro. And actually, we're going to throw in, it's going to be a pick seven this week. We got to pick the Mayweather-Ortiz fight.
Can I get one quick thing in before y'all move to the next segment?
Absolutely.
I know you guys, before I jumped on, you guys were talking about Cam Newton. I just wanted to chime in just very fast on Cam. I see Cam as a flat-out winner. This guy won at Ben College, the junior college, the championship. He won at Auburn. And his performance last week, while it was against the Arizona Cardinals, and it was bad defense, I agree, Cam put that team in a position to win. When he had opportunities where he could have tried to run, Cam was looking to pass. He wasn't looking to run. You know, typically when you have a guy that's physically that size, he wants to make plays with his legs if possible. That wasn't what Cam was doing. Cam was in that pocket making that pass. That last pass that he threw to, I think it was Mike Goodson, where it was short of the first down, he could have very well tried to run and possibly made a play. But he used his arm. He stood in that pocket. I really, really like Cam. He will be inconsistent up and down this year, but that game was phenomenal, and he did an excellent job. I just wanted to chime in because I know you guys were talking about that earlier.
Preach.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think he's gonna have a better year than most people think. All right. So we're gonna slide from Cam right into the pick six this week. We got three games. First, we got to recap how we did last week. All right. So between me, Phil T, and D Wills, we all had our six picks. Our six picks in, and Phil T went 4-2. He had New Orleans. Pittsburgh is losers. He won with the Jets, Alabama, Michigan, and SC. Devon, he won with Green Bay, lost with Pittsburgh, lost with Dallas, won with Alabama, Michigan, and USC. I lost with New Orleans. I lost with Pittsburgh. I lost with Dallas. I won with Alabama, lost with Notre Dame, and won with SC. So I went 2-4. Both Phil T and Devon are 4-2. Ray, he picked on three. He went 2-1. He only picked on the NFL games. He went 2-1. He had Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and New Jersey, and only Pittsburgh lost. So, for this week, I got some ground to catch up with Phil T and Devon. We're going to have our guest pick as well. So, first game, San Diego Chargers at the New England Patriots. Brady went off last week. Ridiculous game, 500 passing yards against Miami. San Diego looks decent, not great against Minnesota. Where do we see this game? Let's get the picks in. I'm going to throw it to D. Wills first off. Go ahead. Who you got?
I ain't never picking against Brady. Don't say that right now. Right now, the way he did his thing, I've been saying this thing about the Patriots. They feel like the old Patriots, them early days of the Patriots with some of the pickups they did in the offseason. I just think this is going to be the story when all the smoke clears. I go with the Patriots over San Diego. I just think that the Patriots are good. They're going to have their stumble at some point in the season. I just don't think it's going to happen now, week two.
All right. Eric, who you going with doing this game?
New England, hands down.
All right. Eric's got New England. Ray?
New England at home after what they did the other night.
All right, Phil T., you said New England, right?
Yeah, I'm going hot potato with it. New England.
All right, sweet. I'm going New England as well. I like San Diego to win the AFC West, but I don't have a whole lot of faith in them at this point in the season against anybody outside the AFC West. So I'm going with New England as well. All right, next game, Philly at Atlanta. Atlanta coming off a tough loss to Chicago, where they got shellacked. They're going to be looking to get some revenge. Philly's coming to town. Mike Vick returning to the ATL. It's going to be an emotional game. Who do y'all got winning this one? I'm throwing this one to Phil T real quick.
Hey, I'm going with the Dirty Birds. You know, it's tough for me to pick against Mike Vick. I got that sentimental type of thing for him. I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere, especially with the Sunday night game. I actually like Philly by 10. I like them by 10 points. I'm sorry, Atlanta. Atlanta by 10.
Okay, I was going to say, you want Philly to win.
Yeah, I went back to 2002. I thought Mike Vick was still in Atlanta, but yeah, I'm going with Atlanta. I'm going with Atlanta by 10.
Okay, all right.
Hey.
Ray, who are you rolling with?
I like Atlanta. I think that, I think it could be another Cam Newton situation. Mike Vick might just explode. He's not going to come away from the game embarrassed. He's going to have a good game down in Atlanta. But I think, you know, in the end, Atlanta's going to win the ball game.
Okay. I'm going with Philly. I think Mike Vick has shown that he can rally troops. Those guys in there, a lot of those guys are there because of Vick. A lot of the free agents that they picked up are there because of Mike Vick. And I think they want to see him be successful. And I think they're gonna go to bat for him. And I think his teammates are gonna step up and really try and play an excellent game and see him come out of there with a win, given all that he went through in that town and the way he was treated on his way out. So I think Philly's gonna have a lot of motivation to go in there and get a win. I don't know how Atlanta's gonna combat that, because they don't have the same motivation that Philly does. Philly's gonna come in with a little bit of extra on their backs. Eric, who are you rolling with?
You know, this one's a lot more interesting as far as a matchup than that New England-San Diego, in my opinion. That Georgia Dome is going to be rocking in there, and Mike Vick is one of my favorite athletes, but he's coming into Atlanta. Matt Ryan at home is ice cold, so they coming off a tough smashing from Chicago. I'm going with Atlanta.
All right. The Wills.
I already said that I thought Atlanta was paper champs when we started the season. And they proved it in Chicago. That blow they took in the playoffs last year was like the fire hit he took against New Orleans. And I'm going with Mike Vick. Mike Vick is going to show out. I just believe that he coming home, he got a lot of stuff boiled up, and he's been wanting to show out. So he's going to do his thing.
All right. Next game, Chicago at New Orleans. Bears coming off a big win against Atlanta. New Orleans coming off a tough loss on the road against an NFC North opponent. Ready to go at it again. Ray, weigh in.
Well, I think, you know, again, I love these home teams, and I like the fact that, you know, New Orleans went up to Green Bay and just scored a ton of points. And then as much as, you know, Chicago, you know, won their game, I'm still not a Chicago believer, and I think New Orleans will just outplay them. I think they'll just overpower them on offense. So
okay,
I'm
going New Orleans as well. So yeah, I'm going New Orleans as well. I think they're the better team. Real simple. I'm gonna throw this one to my man Eric. Who you got?
Chicago has better defense. Chicago has a run game. Decent at best pass game. New Orleans has no defense. I'm going Chicago.
All right. D. Wills, which way you going?
I think Chicago's going to be one of those teams that play well at home. I just don't know if they're going to play well in the road. I picked New Orleans to win that division. I think this is a game they're going to win at home. It's going to be loud. And Breeze is just a better quarterback than Ryan. I just think that Ryan shook on the road a little bit. They didn't play well on the road. I think Breeze at home is a tough bet.
All right. Bill T., who you got? You guys, go ahead.
Just say no, baby. I'm going with Who Dat Nation. Chicago is not the real deal, okay? Like Ray said last week, I'm picking Pittsburgh because they're a good football team, period. That's why I'm going with New Orleans.
All right. So now we're going to pick three college games, and then we're going to go Mayweather-Ortiz. All right, first college game, we got the Ohio State University at the U. So they're going down to Coral Gables. Both teams look like they're headed for some sort of probation. Who wins the probation bowl? I'll go with D. Wills first on this one.
You know, I wanted to go with Uncle Luke, man. But I can't do it. I got to go with the Big Ten. I think them Buckeyes going to come on down in there. They're going to do their thing down there on the road. I just think the players that are coming back for the U, 1 week is not going to be enough to get them ready for this game. I think Ohio State wins a close one.
All right. I'm going to weigh in real quick. I'm going the Ohio State University as well. Even with all the guys back, I don't know how much the U has in the way of talent. As far as Ohio State still has a ton of talent, even though Terrell Pryor is gone. I think some people forget that. That is a loaded program. They have been loaded, and they will be loaded for the next couple of years. So I got the Ohio State Buckeyes winning the probation bowl. Eric, who you got?
I'm going Ohio State. Ohio State, baby. This is going to be a nice one, but Ohio State's going to come out on top.
All right. Phil T.
I'm going with the Buckeyes. O-H-I-O. The Buckeyes. The Buckeyes are better than advertised, and I think both these teams are going to be motivated. But I'm gonna go with the Buckeyes on the road as long as they stay away from the strip clubs.
Add to the game. Ray, who you got?
I can't take the Buckeyes. They're not as inept at handling the probation. There's always rumors down there about probation and payoffs and payola and everything else. And the boys can handle the strip club. So no Ohio for me. I'll be the lone descendant.
All right, so you're going with the U.
I'm going with the U.
All right.
The probation is
all
nothing
right,
new
next
to
game.
You.
Oklahoma, soon to be of the Pac-12, 15, 17, whatever they're going to call that, against Florida State. I'll take this one first. I got to go with Oklahoma. Actually, let me double-check that. Is Oklahoma at home or on the road?
It's
let me check
Florida
real quick.
State.
It's at Florida State?
State? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm still going with Oklahoma on the road. This is Florida State's chance to reestablish itself as an elite program, but I think Oklahoma ain't having that this year. So I'm going Oklahoma. Phil T., clock in.
You know,
I think this is actually going to be the best game of the weekend. This is the I'll probably watch the Philly and Atlanta game, and I'll watch the Oklahoma and Florida State game for sure. I'm taking the Sooners by a touchdown.
Okay. You're giving the scores, too.
Yeah.
Keeping it thorough.
That's bold. That's bold.
Yeah. Eric, who you got?
I agree. The Sooners are going to win this one in a nice close match.
All right. So far, everybody's with the Sooners. D. Wills.
Not so fast, my friends. I went on this one. You know, we talked that Heisman stuff, and I thought this was a game that my quarterback for the Sooners was going to seal his Heisman bid. But that boy, Emmanuel, and this is going to be the tribute to Bobby Bowden. The Sooners are back. I mean, Florida State is back. Them Seminoles are back. I'm going to go on an upset. This is the breakout game for the Seminoles.
Okay. All right, and Ray, who you got?
I don't look at Florida to come back that damn much. I'll have to take Oklahoma. the Sooners at home, and you know me and them home teams, but you know
the Sooners are on the road, right?
So I'm taking Oklahoma on the road.
This is probably the only game on the road I'll take. I have to go against my own better judgment on that. But
are you
going to
take the next one on the road too?
But I'm just saying, I just don't think that Florida's there yet, and Oklahoma is Oklahoma. So.
Okay, so everybody weighed in on that one. Now, the last one we got before we get into Mayweather-Pacquiao. I mean, I wish it was Mayweather-Pacquiao. Mayweather-Ortiz.
Yeah,
that was a Freudian slip, for real. All right, here we go. We got LSU at Mississippi State. I'm gonna let Eric kick this one off.
I'm going LSU on this one. I think Miles is going to have those boys ready to ball.
All right. D. Wills.
I'm going with the Mad Hatter, LSU, that defense. It's going to be a close
one. All right. Field T.
I think this is a game where you're going to be watching whatever you're watching, and underneath the screen, you're going to see an upset alert come up. On the bottom line, upset alert. I see you go see that throughout the whole first half, the third quarter, and all of a sudden LSU is going to kick it in. I'm taking LSU in a close one, but I like Mississippi State. I like what they're doing down there.
Okay. Hey, what'd it do? What you looking like? What is it looking like for you?
Is it on me?
I like LSU.
I like LSU.
Okay.
You know, if they were traveling a little bit farther and didn't have so far to go, but they're just hopping over. They're gonna play this game like it's a home game. You know, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
LSU will play. And
yeah,
LSU,
I'm going LSU as well. I'm going LSU on the road. I agree with Phil. I think it may be one of those games where Mississippi State comes out real fired up. You know how what kind of role emotion can play with college kids. So I think they're going to be fired up. They're going to play an inspired first couple of quarters. But at the end of the day, LSU's got more dogs. They got more dogs than a squad out at Mississippi. So I got to go with LSU on that. So there we go. We got our picks in. All right, I'm gonna keep track of those over the weekend, see how we do. Hopefully I can make up some ground. Now we're going to get into a new segment that we got, inspired by this clip right here.
Cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
Hey, so we got dog of the week, baby. We got dog of the week because, hey,
we need more
you know
dogs.
How to go.
We need more dogs.
Marcus, will you please tell the listeners where that clip is from?
The Coastal Carolina, man. If you haven't checked it out, Google Bennett Presser, coach of Coastal Carolina. This cat is... What happened was his players drove him crazy. They drove that man crazy. Oh, man, that man.
Be a dog.
Oh, man.
We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
I'm sorry, man. I couldn't help it with that one, man. I was dying, man. I was dying with that one. So we're going to give our dogs of the week. I'm going to talk to the field team. Give me two or three guys that stepped up for you. Athletes in general across all sports who had their dog meter on 10 all weekend or over the past week.
All right, I'll keep it a one for the sake of time. But the dog meter, for y'all that don't know, the dog meter is, think of Michael Jordan in the fourth quarter, down by four. He just had that dog in him that he was going to get it done. Now, for me, the guy that had the dog meter this past week was Denard Robinson at University of Michigan. My
yes,
man
sir.
He has combined for 900 yards and 8 touchdowns against the Irish the past couple of years. He did something also that was very special as well. He kept Mike Golic speechless the next day, that next Monday. Mike Golic had nothing to say about what he did against his Irish. So I want to give a shout-out to Denard Robinson. Do your thing, do your thing.
All right.
We need more dogs.
Devon, you heard it, man. We need more dogs. Who you got?
You know I want to jump on that Denard, boy. I wanted to jump on that Denard, I got to double that one back. That is one of the most incredible performances. The atmosphere was live. The big house was on fire. And y'all watched my post all weekend about the Irish being there. I get all kinds of chatter on it. But all you Irish fans out there, come to terms with it. Go to counseling. It's over. You Rocky ain't coming home. You Rocky ain't coming through that door. Rocket and Smell ain't coming back.
Find a couch, find a therapist, work through it.
Denard took the heart of the Irish nation.
All right, I'm gonna toss this one to our guest, Eric.
We need more dogs.
I'm going with Sam. I'm going with Mr. Newton. Highly impressed.
There you go.
Did a phenomenal job in a rookie debut. Again, it was against Arizona, but this rookie threw for over 400 yards. I think it's a fantastic piece that he did in his first game, and this is the beginning of a pro bowler as we speak. This guy is going to be something special.
Excellent. Ray, I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to finish it off.
We need more dogs.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with Cam Newton as well. I think Cam, and I said it earlier, I think Cam Newton's performance this weekend is closer to what he's going to do as far as trying to win football games than what Brady did with his 500 yards, and as impressive as that was. I don't expect Cam Newton to throw for 400 yards every week. What I expect him to do is keep his team in the football game. And if he can sell that to the rest of the team, that team is going to do a hell of a lot better than most everyone thought. You know, all the pundits out there, you know, talked about his learning curve and how much he's going to have to do. But I think he throws that out the window. I think he just wants to win football games. And I think week in and week out, he's going to have his team in a position to win football games.
Excellent. For my dog.
We need more dogs.
For my dog of the week, I'm going with the much maligned Cedric House Shoes Benson. Brother, straight out the clink, there for a buck 20 plus.
Ooh, that's right. I knew that.
It took the Bengals to a victory in a game that they don't have no business winning any games. But you know, I gotta give props. That's major props on this dog meter. I get on old House Shoes from his days in Chicago, but House Shoes Benson came through this week. You know what I'm saying? He came through.
That's my fantasy cows. Special.
We don't need no cows. Need
no oh man, hey, that's a new classic right there, man. I gotta load up all the classics. I gotta get all the classics. So we got about 4 minutes left. I want to thank our guest Eric Hamilton, a fantasy expert, for coming in and dropping mad knowledge.
Thank you for having
dropping
me.
Mad knowledge for us. Greatly appreciate it. Feel free to come back on anytime, brother. Feel free to come back on anytime. We'd love to have you on. You know, we even love to make it a regular segment when you come on, you know, 15, 20 minutes and give us what you can, give us some tips, give everybody out there some tips for the next coming week. So,
Dan,
you know,
come back during the playoffs.
We'll be in touch. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds good. I appreciate that.
I'm going to need the help.
Oh, you got it. Are y'all going to jump into the Mayweather? You know, that's Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Yeah,
I almost forgot. We got to pick the Mayweather Pacquiao fight.
Yeah, yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
Here we go. Mayweather, I keep saying Pacquiao because I want that to happen, but it's not. That's not who it is. It's Mayweather-Ortiz. Mayweather-Ortiz. Now, you know they've been talking on the 24/7. The 24/7s are a very entertaining piece of television, all right? Very entertaining piece. So, D-Wheels, Mayweather-Ortiz, who you going with?
Man, I like that young boy Ortiz, but I'm going for Floyd Mayweather, and he ain't no junior.
Oh man, them boys ignorant. All right, Ray, who you taking?
I'm taking Mayweather too. He's finally getting to beat up on somebody other than his girlfriend. He's gonna just release some more pressure. You know, it's a legitimate punch he's gonna throw. You know, and I don't think he'll mess up a very good payday. He's gonna fight Pacquiao one day. He might be 107 years old, but he ain't going to mess up that line. So back old Mayweather.
All right. Eric, who you got? Mayweather Pacquiao.
Mayweather, obviously, out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. But Mayweather picks his opponents better than anybody else. The reason he picked Ortiz is for the southpaw to prepare him for Pacquiao. Pacquiao was on SportsCenter saying that the blood testing problem is all done. He's agreed to the blood testing. Now it's down to the purse or to the money. They need to decide how to split that money. So I'm going Mayweather, followed up by a Mayweather super fight.
Oh, that did that. Man, you got me licking my chops over here. Can't wait for that. Alright, I'm going to jump in. We got about 90 seconds left. There's a little British lady who would like to chime in. I'm going to interrupt us. I'm going with Mayweather as well. I just, when you talk that much, you can't afford to lose. You come at it like that, you can't afford to lose. So, you know, I'm going with Mayweather. Phil T, Sports PhD, you going to make it a clean sweep or what?
Yes, sir. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. You and Eric broke it down. Take your Mayweather.
All right. So, that's our show. We always finish it off with a dope line. My man Phil T's got one. Go ahead and drop that on the people real quick.
Hey, from Jay-Z, it gets tedious, so I keep one eye open like CBS. Hey, Floyd, keep one eye open because Ortiz is hungry.
Yes, sir. That's how we do it. It's Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio. Holding it down, all right? You are in tune to the resistance every Tuesday night, 8:30 to 10:30. Feel free to join us anytime. You're always welcome.
All right, fellas, you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I better hang this phone up before it dies. I'm all right,
take care, man.
This long. You have a good night.
All right, peace.
All right,
you too.
Bye.
All right, we off.
All right. Good show.
Yeah, that was a nice close out there. That was a nice close.
Definitely.
Thank you, sir. You still there? What is Eric? You still there?
Nah, he took off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We definitely got to have him back, man. He's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good guess.
Are we still recording now, Marcus? Or are
it's
we
after
clear?
Hours. It's, yeah, we clear. We off the air. We're not streaming, but this is going to be on the podcast.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Got to double check.
You want to say that?
we
gonna say
that
over the airwaves.
We go to conference call format. We go to conference call format. If that's what you need.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible we could jump on that?
All right, we'll jump on a conference call. Is that cool?
All right.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll call you, Marcus.
Okay, everybody, yeah.
All right.